My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hey guys, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and is it Joyous Festivus, Andre?
Yes.
What's the Festivus one?
All of the above.
All of the above.
Thank you for joining us on this podcast.
Yep, if you're watching this live, then it's just before Christmas, and if you're watching this
Not live,
we hope you've had a wonderful and merry and joyful Festivus, or whatever you celebrate.
Yes.
So today we're going to be talking about six lessons we learned from the six cars that we bought in the last 6 months.
Wow, that's a lot of sixes.
That's a lot of cars we bought. So we bought some very interesting vehicles spanning from 1965 all the way to 2025, Andre.
So yeah, we don't discriminate.
No.
You know, we purchase, you know, classics. We purchase old beat up cars, brand new amazing cars, all of the above.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw in a truck because you're usually on the truck podcast at the end of this. I'm going to pick one of our trucks, or maybe you can pick the truck, but I've got a truck I want to put in there that you should also comment on, because obviously this year we also bought some trucks.
And where's Tommy, by the way?
Tommy's doing a video because we're short-staffed for the holidays, so you're stuck with me and Andre.
Okay, there you go.
All right, so let's start with the one that you drove the most recently, and that is, of course, we traded in our Corvette. Sorry.
The C8.
We just got a sugar cookie from Mazda. Mazda sent us sugar cookies, and I just ate one. Now it's stuck in my – thank you, Mazda, for the sugar cookies.
They're very yummy, and we've been eating a lot of them this
morning. Yeah. So we bought a Chevy Corvette Stingray earlier this year.
C8.
Yeah, C8. And then it was the 2020. And then we traded it on a Z06 because Z06 prices – have come down dramatically. So the regular car that we bought was like 65,000, mm-hmm. or maybe 70,000. And then we got 65 for trading it in. And our car, which is this Mist Red Z06, was 138,000. It's a top of the line 3LT. So it's got all the bells and whistles. But because everybody wants to upgrade to the ZR1, the Z06s are now gettable and affordable. Which is nice because I kind of feel like it's the sweet spot in the Corvette lineup. And just to recap, there are now four Corvettes, C8s. There's the base Stingray. Then there is the E-Ray. Mm-hmm. Then there is the Z06. Then there is the ZR1. And coming soon is the ZR1X, fulfilling the promise the GM made that they're going to sell us a car with 1,200 horsepower. I don't know if they promised that, but does anybody need 1,200 horsepower?
I think Paul Gerard, our race car driver, does.
And so if you're watching, yes. Yeah, go ahead. If you're watching this video or if you're listening to this, you can go over to TFL Car and you'll see that we brought back a video series we used to do called Hot or Not, where we went to our local IMI racetrack and we set track records using Paul, our race car driver. And the fastest that a car had ever gone was like 101, I forget, like point.
And change, yeah.
Yeah, like 50 or something. And guess what? The Corvette beat the track
record.
It's
the new record holder. It was amazing. I was there too, helping with some filming, and it was super, super day.
Yeah, I mean, the sound of that car is incredible. And the difference, of course, between a base Corvette and the Z06 is that the Z06 has a V8 with a flat plane crank. In other words, Corvette kind of benchmark Ferrari. And so instead of having kind of this lumpy American V8, which I love, mm-hmm. think of like a Harley, right? It's like a heartbeat, like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Now it's got more of a much higher screaming kind of, let's call it Le Mans sound. And it's a very different car. It's much more alive. It's much more of a sports car, much less of just a grand tour. And it's pretty cool that the Corvette can do both of those things, depending on, you know, which one you choose. So what did you think of the Corvette when you drove it?
Well, first of all,
the Z06.
Yeah, so the record that we said you could watch that was just under a minute. And the sound, like you said, was incredible. And I... It doesn't matter if it's, you know, traditional V8 versus not traditional. Basically, this car has a high revving engine, right?
Yes.
That's kind of what it means to be really a flat plane crank. That means, what, 8,500 RPM? I mean, it's possible. This is not, this is a naturally aspirated engine, right? Which is amazing. It makes, what, 670 horsepower.
So you go from almost 500 in the regular Stingray to now 670, so you gain 170
horsepower. A substantial amount. Yeah,
huge amount. You lose torque, though. It's less torquey.
Yeah, so it's not really a truck engine.
No, it's not a truck engine.
It's not a truck engine, so don't expect a Silverado to have this engine anytime soon. But I don't know, Roman, if I was ever able to really get all of the performance, you know, just driving from Fort Collins to Boulder, right? It's really hard to get all of the performance out of a car like this, or even a fraction of it, driving it every day. So taking it to a track, even like a short session like we did in this video, I think it's really, really key to really enjoy this car.
Yeah, and so it's almost like a completely different car. I don't know any other model of car that has these dual personalities. When you get the base Stingray, you've got kind of this grand tour because you've got the magnetic shock, so they, you know, do a good job and kind of ironing out the imperfections in the road. The steering's a little slower. The engine just kind of lopes along, a lot of bottom end torque. And then you go to the Z06, and it's a completely different car. The steering just is alive. You've got much fatter tires. So on the back, you're at 335s, which is incredible.
Humongous.
So it kind of tends to tram line, so you got to kind of stay on top of it. And that engine just loves a scream. You just want to be up there in the 7,000 to 8,000 RPM range and just like, you know, just want to throw in those shifts. And it's like two different cars. And like I said, the lesson I learned is I don't know of any other car that has these dual personalities. Maybe a 911 because they have so many variants. I want to say there's at least 25 variants of the 911. Mm-hmm. But even the 911, I think if you go from like a GT3 RS to like a 911T, which would be kind of the base, they're still very similar. Whereas a Corvette, like I said, it feels like two different cars. And I got to say, Andre, at first, it took me a little bit of time to get used to the Z06 because I kind of got used to a Corvette being a much more American style of performance. And now you go to a European style performance car, and the change is dramatic.
Exactly. So I have a request.
Yeah.
Roman, I need to borrow this car tonight.
Okay. Why?
Well, I'm going to go to the canyon. No, I'm going to go to the canyon roads.
Help Santa. On Christmas Eve, you think people are going to be out there
It's
driving?
A small request. It's not a very big request. Yeah. No. But like a really nice canyon road or maybe, you know, just a twisty road. I mean, this car, you could enjoy this car tremendously, I think. But legally. Doing everything legally, of course.
And the other thing about the car is it's such a supercar bargain, right? So this was, sticker on this was 138. We didn't have like all the track package stuff, so we didn't have the aero on it because, you know, I don't like race cars for the road. I like sports cars for the road. This is the sports car of the bunch. And it just for, you know, we got it substantial discount. It was discounted $8,000 because, you know, everybody wants a ZR1. And so I don't think there's a 911 or a Ferrari or a Lamborghini that you can touch that provides
this price, kind of
performance, double this price, not just this price, double this price.
Oh, dude. Yeah. It's incredible what this car offers.
And yet the thing that always is a head scratcher for me is just how much the Europeans, you know, diss the Corvette. Every time I hear Europeans talk about it, and I'm talking about the Brits, who have a wonderful, think of Top Gear, heritage of, you know, reviewing cars and kind of understanding what sports cars are. None of them take the Corvette serious. And I think that probably has to do with the fact that for a long time, of course, the Corvette was front engine, and any serious sports car had to be mid-engined. Mm-hmm. But now that it's mid-engine, they're still having a hard time with it. They can seem to wrap their head around the fact that GM could build an incredible world-class performance car, which is what you get. We haven't driven the ZR1. In the reviews I've seen, and you've probably seen them too, everybody is over the moon that it's got 1,000 horsepower, but I have this firm belief that anything over 600 horsepower is probably too much for the road. It just seems like, and yes, of course, all you Hellcat people out there and all you TRX people out there, you're like, no, there's no such thing. You know, there's no replacement for displacement, but yeah, I don't know if you can use more than 600 horsepower. So I kind of feel like this is a sweet spot.
Yeah, I agree.
And a good example of that would be anybody who has a Tesla Model S Plaid or anybody who has a Rivian quad motor where you're over 1,000 horsepower. How often do you guys, now be honest, if you have one of those, how often do you actually use 1,000 horsepower? And those are four-wheel drive cars or all-wheel drive cars versus two-wheel drive. Do you like it?
I don't know.
It's
hard.
So after you drove the Corvette, do you want one? Let's see, yeah. Which one did you like better? Did you trade the other one?
I did.
Yeah, tell me your take on it.
I would take a Z06 all day long. So the other thing, I wasn't in love with, mm-hmm. with the base car, mm-hmm. the Stingray, is kind of its styling, its look. It was a little bit narrower, right?
Yeah, so Z06 is a wider body.
Yeah, it's a wide body, and it's got those wheels and tires that really fill out those, you know, those corners, and I think it looks a lot more attractive. I am not a huge fan of blacked out wheels. I think I would have gone with maybe a silver or a polished.
Yeah, for a long time, blackout wheels were the thing. I didn't really have a choice with this. I didn't spec it. It was Johnson's, when we bought it, had ordered it.
Yeah.
And so this was sitting on the showroom floor, so I bought it from the showroom floor.
I can paint the wheels for you if you want.
Don't paint the wheels for me.
Okay.
And it's also TFL colors. Look around here.
Red and black.
Yeah, so that was another reason I went for it.
Yes, that's another reason why I need to borrow it tonight for Christmas, because it is red. I think it's a super car. And I mean it in every sense of the word, right? I love the way it looks, way better than the base C8. The sound it makes is really almost exotic. It makes exotic, you know, exhaust noises. And I actually fit inside of it. Do you fit inside of it pretty well?
I fit kind of. It's like maybe I'm XL and the thing is large. Okay, so I can kind of get into it.
Yes,
and you're taller than I am. But yeah, it's.
I think
little
both
tight.
Of us. I mean, both of us drove it together, and you can fit in it if you're a big dude. So I don't know with a helmet. Maybe you would struggle.
Well, Paul,
I would
certainly struggle. Didn't struggle.
Well, Paul is not quite as tall as you and I.
Yeah. That's being nice. So. I think he would admit he's the perfect race car driver size.
Exactly. That's what you want to be. Yes. Yeah. You want to be lightweight he is, very muscular, very handsome. You know, that's what Paul really is.
True that. And what do you think of the styling? Do you like the styling? It's supposed to be like a fighter plane, right? It's got that kind of fighter plane. There's a lot going on in a Corvette, and it might be less elegant and more fussy, maybe overwrought.
You know,
maybe some of the things.
You know what Corvette I would buy?
What?
If not this, I would buy an E-Ray. Actually.
Oh, you want the all-wheel drive?
Yeah. So I think I, because the E-Ray also has the wider body, right? So
no,
it also
no, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It's got the smaller engine.
No.
Yeah, the E-Ray doesn't have the wider body. Only the Z06, ZR1, and ZR1X. Because you need the wider body, according to Chevy, because you need those bigger air intakes to cool the bigger engine off. And the E-Ray has the...
Can you look up an image of an E-Ray?
E-Ray has a Stingray body because it's got the front-wheel drive. It's, you know, it's electrified, so it's got the battery, and then it's got the two
in
motors.
In the middle, yeah. And it's got a motor in the front, and it's... Anyway, I like the...
Wider. Now look at it. Maybe it is wider?
I like the E-Ray. I like the E-Ray. It is $108,000 according to this site.
Starts at 108.
Starts at 108,600. But 2.5 seconds because it's all-wheel drive.
It looks wider, doesn't it? You might be right. It might have the wider stands.
I thought it was. I thought it was. And I know a lot of people kind of poo-poo the E-Ray, right? They say it's not the real Corvette. It's not the real this and that. But I think it's more of a all-season, all-year-round car. And I think if I was buying a dream Corvette, it may actually have to be the E-Ray.
Oh, first of all, you're never going to find one for 108, so forget about that.
Well, are they gettable? Are they used? I mean, there could be some used ones too.
Yeah, maybe a used one, but not a new one. The dealers never order the base ones. Okay, Chevy Corvette E-Ray. Let's go rear wheel size because that'll tell you whether it's got the bigger, a wider stance. So let's see what the rear wheel size is.
Can you build one, Cole? Can you do a build and buy? If you're watching us, we're kind of on their Chevy.
So it must, yeah, because it says it's wearing a 345 25R21. That's what AI says.
Wow.
That's 345 25R21s.
Those are big fat tires, Roman. Big fat tires. And I don't think I would do a convertible. Where are you at on coupe versus convertible? Because in the coupe, you can remove the the roof section, yeah. Right? And I think that's plenty for me. I don't need, I'm not that fancy. I don't want to push a button and have something fold, and I can lose, it's going to be a heavier car, a more complicated car.
The problem with the Corvette Targa, right, which is what it is, when you remove that rear panel, is that it's pretty loud. You get a lot of wind buffeting, and you get a lot of wind noise. My neighbor had the convertible, so I don't know. I have never driven a convertible, or if I have, I've forgotten because I went on the program. But I would say with the Targa top, it's not a very comfortable. The trick about convertibles and Targas, and we'll get to that when we talk about the Bentley GTC, is when you take the top off or down, you want it to be quiet so that you can have a conversation. And in the Corvette, yeah. It's just a lot of wind buffeting. And so it's kind of cool. And if you're driving like to a Super Cruise in Golden where you're putting down the road at 25 miles an hour, it's fine. But on the highway, you would not want to drive it with the top off. Unless, of course, you really enjoy having a lot of wind in your hair.
So, yeah, I think I would go E-Ray, actually, because it does have that look that I really like. That does have that fat tire in the back. And especially in this blue color with polished wheel, I think that's the ticket.
Okay.
That's my ticket.
All right, there you go. So the E-Ray is the one for Andre. The Z06 is the one for me because even though you get 1,000 horsepower with the ZR1, those are going to be over 200,000, which is kind of above.
Which misses the point, right? The Corvette is kind of every person supercar.
That's probably
supercar.
The cheapest 1,000 horsepower sports car you could buy.
Sure, but I could dream about a $100,000 car that seems attainable, but I could stop dreaming about $200,000 car. You know what I'm saying? It's almost
unobtainium.
It's moving into this unobtainium level of vehicle.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
All right, so let's move on. The next car that we bought, and this was just kind of some cars you go hunt down, some cars come to you. This one came to me, and you're never going to understand this unless you've had it actually happen to you. Have you had that happen to you where a car has actually come to you instead
yes.
of you? Yeah, tell me.
Remember a couple years back.
Charlie.
The Volga. Yeah, it was through Charlie.
Both of us got these cars. Yes. Charlie is a mechanic here in Boulder.
Yes.
And both these cars. So, yeah, the Volga came to you.
So the Guzz GAZ21, Charlie texts Tommy and says, Tommy, look at what in my garage right now at my shop. And I look at the picture. Tommy shows me his phone, and it's like from the 60s. It's a Soviet car, the Guzz 21, GAZ-21, and there it is. So Charlie the car found me through Charlie.
Yeah, and the Sports 800 found me through Charlie as well. So what happened to the Gaz? I forget now. What'd you do with it?
Well, my family wasn't in love with it as much as I was.
Yeah, well, I mean,
even though I ran to the bank, the instant Tommy showed me the picture,
ran to the bank to buy it.
I grabbed $5,000 out of the bank and I bought it. My family wasn't in love with it.
They didn't like Soviet era cars.
But I think I got it out of my system, right? I had it for about a year. I drove it around and had a Buick. It was a V6 swapped. It had a Buick V6.
So you experienced it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I experienced it and moved it on. It's now lives somewhere in Los Angeles.
So about 2 years ago, I went to Japan with Toyota, and they took us to their Heritage Center, you know, like Porsche has, like Mercedes has, where they fix. And I saw this little tiny sports car, and I always thought that the first sports car that Toyota built was the 2000 GT, which is this million-dollar...
Unobtainium
car where they built 300 of them, and Akio Toyota has two, one in Japan, apparently one here, and it was in a James Bond film as a convertible where they actually had to cut the top off. Can you Google that picture? So Sports 800 James Bond...
No, 2000.
Sport 2000 GT James Bond, yeah. And you'll see this picture. It was, I think, the first Toyota ever to be in a... And so I went to... There it is. That's the picture.
Oh, wow. Was Sean Connery?
And he was tall, so he didn't fit, so they had to chop the top off. Anyway, so I went to their Heritage Center, and they had this little tiny sports car that they were working on. I'm like, what the heck is this? And they said, this is called the Sports 800, and the Sports 800 is Toyota's very first sports car. And just like you, Charlie bought one like 5 years ago. It was imported from Japan. And I had no idea what this thing was until I, like I said, went to Japan and saw it being reconstructed there. And it's very much loved in Japan. It's called the Hachi Yoda.
Okay.
Which stands for 800, I think.
Yeah.
Either Yoda Hachi or Hachi Yoda.
I don't know Japanese. But it sounds good.
It's one of those two, yeah. And what makes it so unique and so different is it's Toyota's first sports car. And well, it's a Targa. It's got three distinctions. So number one is the first sports car. Number two, it's the first Targa.
Really?
Yeah. So before the 911 Targa, this came out like a year before then. And it's also the first Toyota to be sold both in a left-hand and a right-hand drive because they built them for American servicemen living in Okinawa. And so when Charlie said that he had one and he was thinking about selling it because he was having some medical issues, I said, well, why don't you trade it with me for the, we have a Citroen 2CV we don't have it. Charlie has it now. So we gave him the 2CV plus another $10,000 and we ended up with this car I think a piece of Toyota history and an iconic piece of Toyota history. Now they're not worth that much yet because people don't know what they are. They're like $40,000 give or take. And what makes them unique is the fact that they have a 2-cylinder boxer engine. Imagine that. Puts out 44 horsepower.
It looks like a motorcycle engine.
It does.
It's that small.
It's so tiny, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's 800 cc, right?
Yeah. Maybe you could find there's probably a shot of it in that video somewhere where we go under the hood.
Well, when you said we just traded for and bought an 800 Toyota,
yeah.
I had no idea what it was.
Nobody knows what it is.
Yeah.
And Toyota had a problem. At this time, Datsun, which of course became Nissan, had a sports car. I want to say, I don't know what it was, but they were selling it. Look how tiny that is.
It's tiny.
But they only had a car called the Publica, which had this powertrain, which only produced 44 horsepower. And so they had to come up with a sports car that would actually be quick, because this car will apparently do 100 miles an hour, 160 kilometers an hour. And so what they did was they came up with a very tiny and a very light sports car so that it would be quick and fast. So this car, get this, weighs 1,290 pounds because the hood, the Targa, and the trunk are made of aluminum. And they actually borrowed, the chief engineer came from the aerospace industry. So if you look at it, the car is very aerodynamic.
Yeah.
And of course, they learned about the use of aluminum from aerospace. And so you can have a 44-horsepower car that is relatively quick if the car is super light, which this is.
It's amazing. I haven't got the chance to drive it yet. I know we're just kind of moving it from our ranch over here to Boulder, and I really wish I could take it for a little drive.
Well, take
it
for a spin.
Yeah.
The fear I have, of course, is they only built Well, they only built, I think, about 1,000 of them, 900 of them. And apparently, there are only about 300 left in the world. And so I am terrified to drive it because if you crash into something, every part for that car is going to have to be fabricated. You're not going to be able to actually buy it because there are no parts exist for that thing unless you find one from another Sports 800, which only a few of them exist in the U.S., so that's going to be a tricky thing to do.
I just wanted to give a shout-out to a few people who are here live with us. So first, Bryce, Jason, Chris, and Loveland, thank you for joining us. Merry Christmas. There's also nothing to see here, here in the chat room as well. Thank you. Thank you for joining us very, very much.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I bought this car as kind of an investment because I figure, it, you know, Toyota's first sports car has got to go up in value, especially since there are less than 300 of them in the world. So at some point, people are going to realize that these things exist and they're going to want them. If you're a true Toyota collector fan, and if you're a true Toyota sports car collector fan, all roads lead to the Sports 800. There's no other way around it. And so I'm hoping that it appreciates. We're going to put it in our studio as kind of a little bit of office furniture. So we had the Fiat Cinquecento sitting in our offices. It's the only car that actually fit through the double doors. And now the car.
And this one should fit also.
Well, the double doors are 58 inches, yeah. And the car is 58 inches.
So we're going to put some Crisco on the side, and we're going to.
I think we could always. It's so light. We could just pick it up and put it on two wheels and scoot it in.
Yeah, 1,200 pounds. Is amazing. I mean, there's some motorcycles that weigh about the same. So you're saying if I do drive it, not to crash it, basically. That's what you're saying.
Yes, please don't crash it because it will not be it will not be replaceable, Andre. All right. Now, I also bought a Bentley.
Well, that's quite a change. You went from a 1,200-pound car to a 12-million-pound
car. To a 5,000-pound car. And apparently, all Bentley Contis, let's go. The British call it the Conti. It's short for the Continental. And they came in two flavors. They came in the Continental GT and the Continental GTC. And the GTC stands for convertible. So GTC for convertible. And they all apparently are either in Southern Florida or Southern California. This is where they all live, at least the convertibles.
Makes sense.
Now, ours is a 2007. And it is when Volkswagen purchased Bentley. So what makes it unique and what I thought we needed to own as TFL was a 12-cylinder. And this has This has a W12.
Yeah.
Which is an iconic engine. Volkswagen under Piëch decided to take two VR, what were those sixes?
VR6s,
and combine them into a W shape. And it produces over 500 horsepower. Here comes the engine. And I think it's going to be an iconic car because... 12-cylinders are far and few between. I think Ferrari just came out with the 12-cylindry, Dolce Cilindri, I think.
Yeah.
But for the most part, 12-cylinders kind of came out of favor. And the reason for that was not only are they thirsty, you know, 12-cylinders, but because while they do provide a lot of power and torque, they're also very heavy. And so there are better ways to get horsepower in a touring car that doesn't have the penalty of weight. So the newest version of these Continentals, of these Contis, have kind of the Volkswagen Group's traditional V8 twin turbo, which is lighter and produces more horsepower. So you've got this big kind of boat anchor sitting at the front. But the upside to all that weight is this car is substantial. I mean, you can really feel the heft of this thing, and it feels very safe and very secure. And it's got this kind of magic ability, just like a Range Rover does, to just make you feel like everything is okay with the world once you're behind the wheel. Like you're in this kind of cozy little world of your own, and what's happening on the outside doesn't matter. It's the fact that you're just in a very secure, very happy, and very luxurious place. And these cars, this car was $200,000 when it was new in 2007, and we bought it for $35,000.
So it did depreciate quite a lot.
Yes, because
of course. But it's been almost 20 years, you know, 18 years or 19. So I have a confession to make.
Yeah.
I have been lusting after one of these too.
Yeah.
Well, you and I took, not this year car, but a little bit later version, ice racing. Remember this?
Yeah, the speed.
Yeah, the speed version of this. And just the presence of it, I mean, the whole car just like you said, it exudes, it has a lot of presence inside and outside, and getting a convertible version of it.
The one I'm pointing to is the
there's
the generation.
Speed, right?
Yeah, that's
yeah, we took this ice racing, which is an odd thing to do, but we did it anyways.
Yeah, it didn't turn out really
why
well.
Why didn't you buy this one? I mean, this one looks nicer.
Well, first of all, I think it was black, or it's a dark blue, I forget, black or dark blue. Secondly, it would have blown the budget. I think that one was like $70,000.
Yeah.
So it went up in price quite a bit. The lesson, you know, the thing about these expensive Bentleys that people are terrified of is exactly what happened to me.
Maintenance.
Yeah. So first of all, I had this happen twice. We'll talk about this in the Porsche too. I just did a video on it. So I called the dealer and I said, does everything work? And he said, yes. And then I said, just to make sure, I'm going to have it do a pre-purchase inspection. So I said, will you please take it down to the shop, a Bentley shop, and have them do an inspection? And they charged me $500 to do this comprehensive inspection. I think I got like 50 pictures. And they said, really, the only thing wrong with it was the trunk doesn't open and close very well, which is true, and it needs an alignment. So I had him do the alignment. I had him try to do the trunk, that didn't necessarily fix it, but it did kind of open better.
But you had confidence after that inspection.
Yeah, and I bought the 2007 specifically because they have these vacuum lines.
Okay.
And the vacuum lines go bad, obviously, after 20 years. And for some reason, Bentley or the Volkswagen Group had decided in the earlier ones, the pre-2005s, to route them under the engine. And to get at them, to replace them, you have to take the engine out. And so if you take it to your Bentley dealership to have those vacuum lines replaced, it's a $13,000 repair.
Yes.
And so I specifically had them check the vacuum lines, and they said they were fine. Great. So pick up the
awesome.
Awesome. I'll pick up the car. Pay for it, pre-purchase inspection done. Dealer says it's good to go. And the first thing I noticed immediately is that the memory seats don't work.
Oh, I mean, the memory feature or just moving the seat?
The seat works, the memory feature doesn't work.
Okay.
So that's done. Second thing I noticed, and I'm pretty good at like finding these things immediately, which means I probably should have flown down and inspected it. The little button that unlocks the car on the door handle, you know, the little yes. Doesn't work. It works on the passenger side, not on the driver's side. So if you're leaving it, you got to use the key fob to lock it. You can't push the little button. That's two. Number three, soft close. These cars have every conceivable feature. Soft close. I love soft close. It's one of the, you know what? That's my soft close is like my
kryptonite.
It's my kryptonite. I just love soft close so much. And it's stupid, right? It's completely, why do you like soft close? You can just close the door. You don't have to just jet. It's actually harder in some ways because if you push it too hard, it closes anyway. So with soft close, you just got to get used to just gently getting
and
it.
And it tightens up.
And it tightens up, yeah. There's something about that makes me so happy. Every time I see the door go, get sucked in. And on this one, the driver's side door does not work. Passenger side works.
Oh, boy. But in order to chase those gremlins, I mean, that could be very expensive or undoable.
Well,
right?
there's more to the story.
Yeah,
if you guys can hang on with me, so that's three. So,
okay.
I start driving it, and I notice that the passenger side mirror shakes like a scared poodle. There's
no.
Something about vibrates, just vibrates. So everything in the world is like all vibrating.
No,
so
every that's time you nauseating.
Look, every that time you look be, over on yeah. the outside no. passenger side mirror,
okay.
So. I'm like, okay, well, all right, I can live with these three things. These are not mission critical. It's an old car. It's got 50,000 miles, right? Here's the rule, and I think a good rule of thumb to know. When you buy a car like this, you have to set aside money because you're going to have to, and I usually set aside at least $5,000. We'll get to that in a second, to fix it. Even if you buy the nicest, most sorted Pebble Beach car, it's always going to have like seven things wrong with it. If you're buying classic cars, that's just the way of the world. Maybe Jay Leno has a perfectly sorted like car that where everything works, but I've never run into one. Never.
Well, maybe we learned that actually this is not on our list.
Maybe
the ZR1.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. But
the ZR1 had low miles, looked amazing, but it was one of those cars that probably sat around too much.
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes buying a driver is better than buying a.
Yeah.
Buying a
so actually, a few more miles is actually better because that car is moving and being used.
And like with the car we'll get to next, even though it's moving, it's braking, and it's getting fixed, if it just sits, it just doesn't get fixed, and cars age like we do when they sit, or when they sleep in this case. Anyway, so those were the things wrong with it. And then I called my friend James, and I was going to drive it back to Colorado. It's a long drive. So I'm super excited. The other thing that breaks on these is the hard top. It's very complicated. I mean, sorry, the soft top.
Yeah.
Very complicated. But I wanted the convertible. If you're going to have a Bentley, especially this car, you should have a convertible. And by the way, when the convertible is down and you've got that wind deflector up, at 70 miles an hour, I could talk to you in a whisper and you would hear me.
Really? It's, so it doesn't have any buffeting problems?
No buffeting.
It's whatsoever.
It's absolutely like whisper quiet. You could listen to Sade. You know, she's got a very kind of low, sexy voice. You can listen to Sade and you would have a wonderful time, as opposed to AC/DC that you could barely hear in the Corvette.
You mean Ozzy's Boneyard?
That's Nathan. That's Nathan, Ozzy's Boneyard, yeah.
Yeah.
So the car, you know, has these little niggles, which are not a big deal. So I'm driving to pick up James, and sure as you know what, the check engine light comes on. And I can't tell you how devastated I was. Because now I got a 2,500-mile drive,
uh-huh.
And at this point, I was like, should I go just return this car, go get my money back from the pre-inspection purchase? Because I had done everything right, and yet the check engine light still comes on, and that could be coincidence. So then I pick up James.
And I see it right there. It's on the dash.
Yeah, and I'm so bummed. So we get a code reader, so I have to spend $100 for a code reader, and it turns out that the code is to do with the emissions, which also has to do with, you know, one of the banks maybe isn't getting the right amount of fuel. It's either getting too much or too little fuel. And that is the issue that happens when you have those vacuum line problems. So the question I had asked about.
Your heart sank probably.
Oh, it sank
several,
so much.
Several yeah, feet.
Because now I'm looking at, not a 13,000 because I got the later one. So you can replace the vacuum lines on this car without having to remove the engine, but you still have to remove the steering box. So it's like a $6,000 repair. So I call up the shop and I'm like, hey guys, what the heck? You know? And they said, oh, we checked the vacuum lines on top and those had been replaced, but they didn't check the vacuum lines below the engine.
Oh, they forgot? Is that another $500?
I don't know. I'm like, well, I just assumed when I said check the vacuum lines that you would check all of them.
Yes.
So, and I was like, because now I'm stuck because I either have to drive home or I have to buy a ticket to fly home. Within, you know, a day, which isn't going to be cheap. So we're looking at, we looked up the ticket prices. It was $500 for each of us. So it would have been $1,000 to fly home. And then I'd have to go. And this was, it was a holiday weekend. And then I'd have to go back to the dealer and try to get my money back and I'm like, screw it. We'll just try to sort this out. Maybe it's something simple. Because one of the things that causes it is when the fuel cap doesn't tighten enough. So we go to the parts dealer, and we're like, do you have a fuel cap for a Bentley 2007 Lincoln Continental GTC? And they're like,
and then they're laughing.
And then James is like, didn't the Volkswagen, go ahead.
So Volkswagen used this engine.
Exactly.
In many different vehicles.
Yeah, they said, didn't the Phaeton have the same engine?
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah. And I go, do you have a fuel cap? Oh, and they said, oh, by the way, if we can order it, but it'll be $87.
Okay.
For the Bentley fuel cap. And I'm like, do you have a fuel cap for a Volkswagen Phaeton with the W12. They're like, oh, we have one of those. $7.
Oh, how nice.
And it worked.
Okay, there you go. So you're changing the fuel cap right now. We're kind of watching that.
Yeah, $7. So it worked. It still didn't, you know. So then we clear the check engine light and we decide we're going to go for it.
Uh-huh.
And we start driving back home. So 20,000 miles, that's like a 2-day trip,
yeah.
Even with two of us. That's a lot. You
that's
know
a
that.
Lot of miles per day.
I that's mean, a lot.
No
yeah.
matter who you are.
Actually, it was a 3-day, it was like 2.5 days.
Yes.
Because you're doing basically 1,000 miles a day and you've
yeah.
done that.
That's a lot.
That's a
yes.
lot. Yeah. So the light comes back on later that day. But at this point, we're kind of up by Atlanta. So I'm like, okay, clear it again. And so basically, we drove it home and kept clearing the check engine light. And then when I got it home, it hasn't come back.
So maybe it was just upset. It didn't want to leave Florida, maybe?
I'm thinking.
It was just upset for a while?
Maybe the vacuum has something to do with like the altitude up here. Or maybe it's just the long drives that
yeah.
somehow, when you're driving it for hours on end, that causes the check engine light to come on. And then I took it to our local little shop here, and I said, hey, I've got some money. You know, can you fix these things? And they charged me $200 to say, yeah, but it's going to be expensive. And they did nothing.
So. What is this?
I know.
So is it true, Roman, that when you pull up in an expensive
car? Actually, they made the trunk worse. Now it doesn't work at all. So the trunk used to open. It used to kind of open halfway and then stop and then open the rest of the way. Now it doesn't even open. Now you gotta click the button and manually you gotta slowly open it up and then manually you gotta close it.
Wait, do you have to use your muscles to open and close the trunk?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you gotta. It still has a motor, but you gotta kind of help it along. So I just got charged $200 for nothing, basically.
So what is this like? When you pull up in an expensive car, people assume you're stupid. I mean, what is the deal here?
They assume you have a lot of money, and then you can spend a lot of money. And to be fair, they were like, "Well, it's going to take a lot of. You got to get Bentley parts." And I suggested to them, I said, "Why don't you take like the door handle from the one side and swap it with the other one? I don't care if it doesn't work on the passenger side, right? That little button." Or the soft close.
It's probably not swappable. I mean,
it probably isn't swappable. Yeah. I don't know, but I'm just leaving it.
Okay.
I'm just leaving it.
But the light hasn't come back
recently. The light hasn't come back, which is the main part.
Okay.
So the light hasn't come back. The trunk doesn't work. The little door button doesn't work. But everything else works. And it's a joy to drive.
We also have Alan here. Thank you, Adam and Tad. So thank you. Soft closed Truman is my CTIS, so central tire inflation system. Ooh, that's a feature.
Yeah. Well, that's a
Unimog feature.
That is a Unimog feature. Yeah. That's not a Bentley feature.
Yeah.
Even though I would think Bentley could do it because they charge so much. It'd be cool if they did. Bentley, there's a free one for you. Go central.
Hey Bentley, on the next Bentayga SUV, CTIS. Okay.
All right. Before I go to another story, let's skip. And I'm going to say this, per dollar, the best car we bought this year, we're going to do the Fiat, Cole, per dollar, the very best car we bought this year, the most fun to drive, the most comments, the most entertaining, the most joyful is the Fiat Spider 2000.
Hear this.
So we bought this car at our donated car auction. Somebody donated this car, and as you can tell, it's had a rather interesting life.
Well, the paint is faded a little bit on some areas of it, but also it's pretty clean.
There's a dent on one side, but somebody replaced a roof. It's a convertible. So this is a 1976 Fiat Spider that looks like a baby Ferrari because the same guy who did, I think it was the old Ferrari California, the old one, not the new one, designed this. And so if you go back and look at like 60s and 70s Ferrari, without the bumper there, this is a very much a Ferrari-like car. And we bought this at this donated car auction. This was definitely donated. Somebody like had enough. It had just under 100,000 miles.
So somebody really appreciated this car too.
It's a five-speed manual and new top. I think we spent just $4,000 for it. New exhaust on it. And it is so much fun to drive. I can't even begin to express to tell you just how fun this car is. More smiles per mile than any of these cars that we're talking about.
So when I heard about this first, so when you said, hey, Andre, we just purchased this Fiat, at first I just kind of threw my hands up in the air, and I was wondering why, because I didn't understand, right? And then you're like, Andre, take it for a drive, right? Remember? Mm-hmm. You came back at like, it was like 4 p.m. or something like that. I took it for a drive, kind of a short one, maybe 5, 6, 7 miles, and the transmission just... Always, it's easy to shift. It just falls into hand. Once again, it's an open experience, right? It's convertible top. And it's, I understood. Well, also, it's not very expensive.
No.
How much did we pay for it?
$4,000. Yeah.
So for a car, for this experience, I mean, it's a Fiat. So people are probably making
assumptions about its quality.
Yeah, or reliability, right? But I think we aired up the tires, right?
Yeah.
And it just became this really, really fun vehicle.
It's like this happy dog that you have in your life that just loves you and just, come on, let's go play. It just keeps teasing you. You want to go out. And, it's a very small car. And for an Italian car, you would think that it would be tight, but it's not. It's actually very roomy.
Mm-hmm.
I was in this car with James, who's also a big guy. And the two of us, we were driving it with lays in the back.
You probably overloaded this car.
No, we didn't overload it, but it did look like, two gay men on a Sunday drive.
Hey.
And he's married. I'm married. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying that look was there.
Yeah.
Because the car is a little feminine in some ways.
Yes.
But I can't think of a more fun, more... interesting car than this. So it's got plenty of room. It doesn't have any bells and whistles. Zero. manual five-speed, manual non-powered steering.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Yeah. You feel connected to it.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just, you know, it's pretty ratty because a lot of, you know, the wood is now, you know, gone off. I mean, it is from 1976. And what they did back in the 70s is they created, I think the earlier Fiat was an 1800cc. So they bored it out, gave it a little bit more power. There's also a turbo version of this, made it a little bit more America friendly. But everything comes to hand, like you said. It's easy to get in and out. You don't care about where you park it because who's going to, you know. And I'm amazed at how many people like comment on this car. More than any of these other cars, people like come up to me and they say, wow, what a cool car.
Yeah.
Would have never guessed that.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I did not guess it when you first told me about it. It does have this aftermarket stereo, which
is horrible.
Most used cars like this
that's
do.
My other pet peeve. When they put in that like that Kenworth. Yeah, when they put the Kenwood radio in where like the lights chase each other around. Right.
It's a very 90s thing.
Yeah, and you take like this 70s car and you give it this kind of 90s vibe. You can see that the plastic is kind of broken.
Yeah.
But everything works on it. So even though it's not good, the lights work, the heater works, the turn signal works. It starts and runs. I just drove it last week because it was sitting there asking me to go play. And I said, I can't turn you down.
There you go.
All right.
Amazingly fun car.
So let's keep going. The latest purchase is a Porsche 911, a 997.1. And as you guys know, we've had G-Body, which is a 1980s Porsche. We bought this car kind of with the top down, and I never actually tried it. And when I got it home, I found out that the top didn't work. Not this car, but the G-Body.
The previous car, yeah.
It's a G-Body G50 transmission. It's an 87. It's the one that everybody wants. I'm not going to get into the weeds on that. They changed transmission 87, and it's a much better transmission than in the previous car. Anyway, I bought the car, and then I proceeded to put about $40,000 of work into it. So I redid the top because it was broken. I redid the interior. I kind of redid the computer in it. Just a lot of things got fixed on the car because it was kind of abused and not a lot of deferred maintenance, basically. We're selling it right now, so if you're interested, it's over at
Selton Motors.
Selton Motors in Boulder. To replace that car, and not because I put so much time and effort into it, but we're selling it because I kind of had the experience. I had the air-cooled 3.2 liter. You know,
here it is.
There
yeah.
it is. Yeah, I had the experience. You can see the interior is really nice now.
The wheels.
Fuchs, put Fuchs on it, new top. The drivetrain was always solid. But I've been there, done that, and the problem is it's a classic. It's just a little...
Well, I was afraid you weren't enjoying it very much.
No, it's.
I mean,
it was
sitting. It was being repaired.
That top. It was probably in the dealership for a year getting the top fixed.
That's ridiculous.
And then it got too precious, and I was too worried to drive it. So I wanted something that could be a daily driver. Now we've owned a 996, which is first of the water cooled cars, Those cars are good, but the problem with them is the interiors are pretty crappy. They're the kind of the fried egg headlight ones.
Yeah, I don't like that headlight.
So I found the next generation, which is the 997.
Okay.
Now, this has issues. The 997s have two big major issues. Number one is bore scoring, which basically means that the cylinders get kind of scores in them, and then the compression goes around and to the top of the piston, and you lose compression, and...
It's
an engine rebuild, basically. Very expensive. And they also have the IMS bearing issue.
Uh-huh.
And I knew this about the 997, especially the first year. This is a 2005, which is the first year of the 97. But some people call this the prettiest 911 of all. The shape is absolutely gorgeous. It's classic 911. It's also not as big as the modern ones.
Yeah, it actually feels compact, actually. Not much different from that 80s car, actually.
Yeah, and the one you want is the S, because that's 350 horsepower, so it's modern. So the way, you know, there's that saying, Andre, when the top goes down, the price goes up.
Yes.
Not in Porsches.
What?
In Porsches, it's the exact opposite. When the top goes down, the price goes down. So you can find 997s with convertibles, and with automatics. And you really don't want the automatic because that's a traditional automatic. I think in 2009 or 2010, they went to the PDK, which is basically the dual clutch.
Yeah.
But the automatic didn't pair very well. You also want the S, which gives you that 355 horsepower and gives you a locking rear, not a locking, but a...
limited slip.
Limited slip, yeah. It gives you bigger brakes, more, you know, it's just a better... better sports car.
Usually the S means a lot.
Yeah.
That S badge on the back is really valuable.
It is valuable, especially if it's a manual and if it's not a convertible because people want the solidity that the coupe provides. So I found this car with 103,000 miles on Hagerty, where Hagerty bought an auction company called Broad Arrow. So now they're kind of competing with Bring a Trailer and Cars and Bids. And this was... for sale. The color is it's a dark blue metallic.
It's deep blue, kind of.
It's almost black.
Yes.
And it's got the lobster claw wheels, which 997s are popular for, and they're black, and people think that they're painted, but you could get them black from the factory. So those are factory wheels. They're not, nobody took the silver ones and painted them. And the car was very original. I loved the look of it, and it had everything that I wanted. It was in two accidents, but no airbag deployment. And I bid on it, and it bid up to $29,000, it was a no-sale.
Mm.
So the folks at Hagerty called me, and they said, hey, we know that there's an issue with this car, and that is that there was no documentation, because you do not want to buy this car if the IMS bearing has not been replaced or if there is bore scoring. A traditional way you find out if there's bore scoring is you, what's that called? You scope it. You put a camera down and you do that. Or you can do a compression test,
maybe, yeah.
So the Hagerty calls me and they said, if we can get you the documentation for this car, then would you buy it for $35,000? That includes their fees, which are pretty high. They charge, I think, 7%, which is a big number. You know?
Yeah,
it's a big number. Yeah. So it would have been like $2,000. So I said, yes. And sure enough, the guy had the documentation. I got like a stack of records, like 2 inches tall.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it included the fact that the IMS bearing had been replaced, the clutch had been replaced, and when they did that, they did a compression test, and the compression came back good. So it might have bore scoring, but the effect of bore scoring is bad compression. So if it's got good compression, you could assume that it doesn't have bore scoring.
Well, plus it has 100,000 miles.
103,
yeah.
So I bought it for $35,000, but I was a little hesitant. So I called Hagerty. We had a phone conversation, and I said, "Is this a good car?" And the guy who the Hagerty representative said, "Yes, this is actually a car I'd buy myself." So I assumed it was going to be good. And then today I put up a video documenting the 7 things that are wrong with it.
But are they serious things? Can you give me at least half?
Yeah, that video is on LTFL.com, and you can see it. So I'll walk you through.
Give me a little bit.
So the drivetrain, once again, the drivetrain is good.
Okay, well that's a big check.
Transmission is good.
Yeah,
the body is good. All right, but the things that are wrong with it. When I got in the passenger seat, if you try to move it back and forth, it doesn't move back and forth. It tilts left or right. So one of the motors is dead. So it just goes, You see what I'm saying? You see, it either tilts toward the driver or away from the driver because one of the motors isn't moving it. Number one. Number two, the passenger window, and this could be an easy reprogramming fix because people are making those comments. The passenger window goes down, doesn't like to come up. So you can end up with the passenger window open.
Mm.
Number three, the heated seats don't work.
Okay, well, not a
number four, the HomeLink doesn't work.
Okay, but that's technology from 20 years ago, Ramin.
Yeah, and that could have to do with the fuse, or it could have to do with the computer. If the battery goes bad on these cars, the computer forgets that it has some of these options. So it forgets that it has heated seats. It forgets that it has HomeLink. And so then you got to reprogram it. And so maybe the battery, you know, reprogrammed it.
Mm.
So HomeLink doesn't work. Heated seats don't work. The one that really is kind of a deal breaker in some ways and is dangerous, especially in Colorado, is a squirty thing doesn't work. So wipers work, but when you pull it, it squirt the...
That could be a big problem,
yeah.
Actually.
And I filled it up with wiper fluid. So I tried that, and that did not fix it.
Interesting. So, you know, like, it's a really great thing that here at TFL, we do purchase a lot of these older vehicles.
Yeah.
Because we get these questions a lot, even on the truck side, SUV side, anything, where, you know, people are saying, why put so many features in a vehicle or a car? You know, is it going to last? And we're finding out exactly what lasts and what doesn't last.
Well, a lot of stuff got replaced, you know. And look, it's $35,000 for a 997 Carrera S manual,
Coupe
is a good price. And once again, I put aside $5,000 to fix it. The body's in good shape. I'm not blaming Hagerty. Look, it's buyer beware. You're buying this thing at an auction. I don't like buying cars at an auction. We can talk about that when we get to the, if we ever get to the ZR1. But I have no like preconceived notions that this car is going to be perfect. Like I said, even if you buy a Pebble Beach car, at 103,000 miles, cars are going to get in accidents. Things are going to break. It's just, you just got to plan for it. And none of these are mission critical. If you never have a passenger, this car is perfect. Because mm-hmm. the window won't go down. It'll just stay up. Sure. But we'll get, these are little things that hopefully I'll get sorted. I found a different shop and I'm going to take it to them and see if they can actually sort these things out. And
instead of just charging you for nothing?
Instead of charging me $200 for looking at it and saying, yep, it's broken, all right.
Yeah, great. Yeah,
And I don't even blame Hagerty. You know, this is not the, you know, this is buyer beware. And so...
As with any old vehicle, yeah.
As with any old vehicle. Yeah. And I look forward to this because now it gives me a project. So, like, apparently you can kind of figure out the window thing yourself. Somebody in the comments today said it might be that the window has lost the programming for where when it's up and down. So you can, I'm going to try to reprogram it. And hopefully that'll fix it. So let's move on to the favorite car that we bought for you, not for me.
Okay.
Which is our, what year is the Dodge Viper?
It's a 94.
Okay.
First gen RT10 Dodge Viper, the Widowmaker.
So you really clicked with this car. Tell me why.
Yes.
I think I know why, but tell me why.
So, and I think there was this theme going through a lot of the cars we talked about is that, for example, I said I've been lusting after that Bentley, right? And oftentimes when you meet your hero, you know, that car or that person that you've been kind of looking at from afar and you
really...
This is
not the car we bought, by the way.
The car we bought does not morph into different shapes.
That's the old Viper
TV show. So sometimes when you meet your hero, and when you met your hero, the Bentley, you know, he gave you an engine light, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes it doesn't work out. But with this Viper, when I met the hero of mine, which is this Viper, it delivered on everything. Yeah, it was. I knew it was. You know, you have to treat it with respect, right? It was called the Widowmaker, not for nothing.
Well, it has no driver aids, no ABS, no
nothing.
Stability control, just you and 400 horsepower and a 10-cylinder that will light up those rear tires in a heartbeat.
Exactly. So no airbags even.
No.
I mean, it does have seat belts, thank goodness.
Yes.
And the car did come with, you know, that hard top that we now put on.
This was the one car where we actually had no issues with it. This is the exception to the rule. So spend $40,000, and it's weird because Vipers, the older they get, the cheaper they are. The first gen are cheaper than the second gen.
Yeah.
There's five gens, but there's really three. It's kind of like Porsche where you get this like middle one.
Middle gen, yeah.
Yeah, but really three gens. The newest gen, the ACRs, those are like $300,000 cars right now, which is stupid because I should have bought one. Back when they were, you know, when we were testing them,
right?
But this car was 40,000, dude. It's a
and
hell
it also,
of a bargain.
And it also had very low miles, which kind of scared me at first.
18, I think. 19,
it was like 18,000 miles,
yeah.
Which at first scared me because we just said don't buy a car with too little miles, right?
Yeah.
But like you said, this car delivered on everything. It starts well. It does have a little, you know, you have to kind of coax it into starting.
Yeah. So the Vipers have this issue where the fuel pump. Takes a
little while to bring the fuel in. So you have to crank it a little bit,
yeah.
But it wakes up, you know, with a growl. It has a very unique sound because you're listening to the five cylinders on the left and five on the right.
It doesn't have a cross pipe, so you only hear five of the 10 cylinders because they're coming out right next to you because of those side pipes.
And the previous owner was also a pretty tall dude. He lowered the driver's seat a little bit,
so
right?
So you're not looking at the top of the A-pillar.
Exactly.
Which fits you,
it fits me.
Yeah, and the only thing we had to do to it was it had these goofy next-generation wheels.
Yes.
And the iconic thing about these cars were those three-spoke wheels, which a lot of people hate. But you have to do it.
And so. You did it. You found a set of original... in Arizona, which was a really amazing, great condition wheels.
Brand new, out of the box. Mopar box, brand new.
Yeah.
I found the three spokes. We put them on. And then Michelin, thank you, gave us, because you can't get tires for these. Once again, they're like, I think, 225s?
Three 325s.
Yeah, yes. They're 325s. They're so wide. And so thanks
really
to Michelin, we got a set of tires. And The other thing that we did was it had that goofy Kenwood radio. And when I was buying it, I'm like, I was so bummed because it had that, because it just takes you out of the moment. You're now you're in two different eras. And I said, hey, you still have the original radio? And the guy said, well, check in that box. He had a box. And,
yeah, there was.
And so I replaced the original radio, which is a horrible radio, but it belongs in the car. So now we have the original radio. Let's see if we can see it.
And actually, you got the speakers connected and working too.
Yeah, because the speakers weren't working. Not that you can hear them.
Is the AC working? I can't remember. AC works. Yeah, AC works.
I fixed the AC. Yeah, it just needed to be
recharged.
Recharged. Yeah. So.
And here's another shot. So Tommy and Case took it to the dyno, and actually, it's a very healthy engine. The engine actually was producing more than. Kind of, you know, what we expected.
That was our man Jordan who stuck a Viper engine in. I think that was, what was it, a Fiat? I think he stuck it in a Fiat.
Yes.
Yeah.
That little tiny shot. Yeah, he's an amazing dude.
And then you can see the three spokes.
Yeah.
So we got the three spokes back. So I brought it back to stock, basically.
Yeah, which is amazing.
And now we have the hard top, the soft top. A lot of people don't like What's the model on this one? It's the RT10.
RT10.
People want the GTS. It's a little bit more livable because that's the hard top.
That's
a
hard top, and it's got not a removable hard top. It actually has a coupe body on it.
And then the exhaust goes out the back in the first generation.
Yeah, because in this one, you could burn your feet or your ankles getting in and out of this car.
You can, yeah.
Because the pipes are right there on the side.
Viper will bite.
Yes, and it delivers, like I said. So when you meet this one, especially this car, it has the power. The engine is very healthy. It fits everything. The dashboard, the interior is really cheap, right?
Oh my God, it's beyond cheap. It's like Lego. Like somebody.
And it's not aging well. Let's just say that.
No, it's not aging well at all.
It's not aging well, but nonetheless, you kind of expect all of this stuff with this particular car.
And the later generations got better. They got nicer. That's why I think people want the later generations because they're more livable. But if you want, you know, if you want the lead in the pencil.
The OG.
Then this is the one that you have to get. Yeah. And I think we did really well with this car. So out of the five here, we did really well with two of them. Two were sort of problematic, and one was a complete basket case. And that's the one we should talk to where we also bought this. This is our bonus. And you'll see it in this video. It's the Corvette ZR1, the very first Corvette ZR1.
Yeah.
We bought this on Bring a Trailer. And that one is super disappointing in a lot of ways because when I went to pick it up, the guy said, be careful with first gear before I drove it. So me and Tommy flew to Arizona. We paid $27,000 for this car, which is a good price. The body's in good shape. It's got both the glass and the hardtop. It
looks
very
good.
Original, 27,000 miles, I think, which isn't a lot. And then we get in it, and I put it in first gear, and I'm like, dang, the synchro's gone. The synchro is complete.
Is it just crunching?
Yeah, first gear synchro is completely gone. And so I'm like, what do we do now? Do we fly back? Once again, brought it on auction site. Nobody mentioned that the first – I mean, you'd think you'd mention it. Like, hey, the first gear is
– It's crunchy.
It's crunchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I love cars and – And we're TFL, so we don't want to be like we're not car dealers, right? I didn't want to like get this reputation of flying down there, and then the guy posted TFL was here, and they walked away. You know, I didn't want any of that. You just can't do that. So we bought the car, and then of course driving it up from Arizona.
You got it to Moab.
I got it to Moab, yeah, and I was having some stomach issues because I started on the GP1 stuff, you know, the Ozempic stuff. And I was fertilizing southern Utah and northern Arizona, so I was pretty miserable. So then the next morning, Tommy and I decided to take it to Walker Drugs to get some diarrhea medicine. And while we're pulling up, all of a sudden, Tommy says the alternator light comes on, which is a bad thing. Usually that means the alternator's gone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, stop. I open up the hood, and the car is just squirting oil like it's coming out of an artery. It's just completely...
So the car fertilized the parking lot.
Yeah, 7 quarts of oil went flying everywhere. And I was having a miserable day to begin with. I also didn't, you know, have an idea that these seats in this car are the sports seats. And they're like the Porsche sports seats where the bolsters are very tight.
And very narrow.
And I have a big, big ass. And basically, either I sit with one cheek in the seat, either the left cheek in and the other one out, or the right cheek in and the left one out. And it's very painful and very uncomfortable. So we spent half the drive trying to find a pillow that I could put underneath myself so I would actually fit in the seat. And then the problem is when I do the pillow, my head hits the roof.
Yeah.
So now I'm driving around. So I was not having a good day. And then both the oil lines let go and the thing squirted oil. And it's just been a kind of a nightmare. And then we took it to Jordan. And it turns out not only is the synchro not right, but the car probably isn't making all the power it should be.
It's slowish.
Yeah, we have quite the project with this guy.
Yeah, so it's kind of the basket case, I would say, of the bunch, because you could live without like a window switch working.
Yes.
But when you actually have an engine that's not healthy, not maybe putting out all of its power, and the transmission is crunchy.
Well, it's got this key, so you can get either 200 horsepower,
yes,
or what is it? Like, I forget what the full, it was like 350.
It's like 350 or 3.
Yeah. So exactly. The car is really cool. So people think that Lotus built the engine for this car. It was actually, at that time, GM owned Lotus, and they wanted to do this world-beating sports car, so they asked them to design this very advanced. It's got 32 valves per cylinder, right? It's a very advanced engine, dual overhead cam, which GM had never had in a Corvette. And Lotus said, yes, we can do that, but then GM didn't necessarily have the skill to build an engine made of aluminum, which was the first aluminum engine. And so they went to Mercury Marine, and Mercury Marine actually built those engines for GM. So there's just a lot of cool history. There's a great story behind it, dual power mode. Unfortunately, this one isn't, living up to its full potential. So we're going to work with Jordan, and we're going to see if we can fix the engine, see if we can get it healthy, and then we're going to have to find a new transmission for it. And my rule of 5,000 is going to come to get blown out of the water.
Yeah, on this one.
Yeah.
The Fiat is a lovely car that hasn't needed anything.
Yes.
For not a lot of money.
And this one's
is the opposite.
This is the opposite.
This is the opposite.
This is kind of, used car, classic car ownership. And I remember once when I was at the guys who were fixing the G-body Porsche, and I just spent $13,000 putting on a new top, and they said, you're the right owner for this car, Roman. And I said, why? And they said, because you got the money to fix it. I'm like, great. You said, I'm a piggy bank.
Yeah.
All right, last one. We do have to do a truck.
Last one. Well, Ted has a question.
Okay, go ahead, Ted, and we'll do the truck.
So Ted has an interesting question. He says, have either of you bought a car without telling your wife? He has a 17-year-old FJ Cruiser, which is rusting away and falling apart. He said he needed to replace it, so he bought a used Cayenne Porsche without telling his significant other. And I'm terrified of telling her.
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
Yeah, of course. We're car guys. We do that all the time.
So I think... first of all, your old car is rusting away. So you tell her, hey, my FJ Cruiser, which I used to love and was good, it's not good anymore. So I really, this came up. So I really had to buy a Cayenne. But it goes both ways. So when next month, when she comes to you and says, I just bought XYZ...
A great question.
You also have to be fine with it. When she comes back and says, you know what, I bought a palm tree for the yard because, we have to have palm trees.
Especially if he lives in Colorado. That's going to be quite the investment.
You say, yes, honey, your palm tree looks amazing because, she kind of has to be okay with your Cayenne, and you have to be okay with whatever she's doing.
So there's two ways to look at this. Yes. I think I'll give you my answer in a second, but there's two ways to look at this. The first way to look at this is you're married and you now have a budget and you're probably taking your money that you're earning and your wife's money and you're putting in the bank account. And so she has a legitimate say in how you spend that money, as do you and how she spends it.
Exactly.
Right. So I think that is the way that many women and many people, I don't want to be sexist, would look at it. But there's another way to look at it, and that is she married a car guy. She should have kind of known what she was getting into because that's what we do. Some people call it a hobby. Some people call it a sickness.
Yes.
It's
both.
And it's both. Yeah. There's just, look, you can rationalize this in a lot of good ways, right? I spend money on cars. I don't spend money on gambling. I don't spend money on womanizing. I don't spend money on traveling, right? This is what brings me joy. This is what fulfills my life. And I was, to be honest, I was a car guy long before I was a husband.
Yeah.
And I can't stop that part of me. I can't, like, hey, I'm married now, so I'm going to turn that part of me off, honey. And, you know, we're going to go buy a Honda CR-V because it's practical and it makes sense and it's the right thing to do. That's just not going to make me happy. And maybe you should have that conversation with your wife. Now we're giving advice, but maybe you should say, at some point, you're going to want me happy. That doesn't mean I'm going to go buy a Lamborghini or a Ferrari. I understand, you know, I'm not going to put my family in debt.
Yeah.
But like Andre said, this car needed to be replaced. This is what I do. And I did the thing, not just for me, but I did it for our family because I wanted you to be in something safe. I wanted my kids to be in something safe. And it's also kind of what I am. So let me be what I am, because if you don't, I'm going to start to resent you. And that's going to have all kinds of other implications down the road. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
So that's kind of the answer. And with my wife, I think we've gotten to the point now where she understands that this is my job.
Well, it's a little bit different because it's also a job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm very blessed that I get to fulfill my hobby as my job. And so when I buy these cars, these are financial decisions that I make for the business, not for a family. And I can separate the two. But I was in your shoes until I was doing this. And so I completely and utterly understand. One of the ways that I mitigated around it was oftentimes at Christmas time, if we had the finances, I would actually buy a car and surprise her with it. So it wasn't the car that I wanted, but it was a car that I think she would have liked. And it actually, I think, worked for the most part. So I one year I bought her a used one because we didn't have a huge budget, but I bought her a BMW X5. And you can buy these used cars, especially if you want to be financially responsible. This one was certified by the dealership, so I knew that she'd be worried about it. I think that made her happy. And so, you know, we kind of share the love. I don't know if that's going to work in your family, but it's what we do. You want to talk about a truck?
Don't be terrified.
Don't be terrified.
Okay.
Just be honest and, you know, explain this to her. And if she loves you, she'll understand.
Mm-hmm. And when she buys a palm tree, it'll be...
She's still going to be pissed off, but but at least she'll understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We bought a lot of trucks.
Yes.
This year. The one that I wanted to talk about is kind of the most interesting one, and that is our military truck.
Yes, that's very unique.
We call him Gigi, yeah.
We call him General Giant.
Yes.
Yes. Boy.
I'm going to let you talk about this guy.
Yeah, so there's this really side culture, right, where you take military vehicles that were meant for one purpose, which is fighting wars and carrying soldiers and things. And you can make them into fun vehicles, right? A little bit more fun. So there's a company, Boyce Equipment, and that's what they do. They buy or get old surplus vehicles, and then they modify them in this way. So basically, it used to be a 6x6. Now it's a 4x4. It's on larger tires.
It's a Bob Deuce and a half.
Exactly.
That's what it's officially.
So Deuce and a half really is a nickname that soldiers gave to some of their big 2.5-ton trucks, which meant it could carry 2.5 tons of weight over any terrain. Basically, that's kind of how they were rated. Now it's a 4x4 with gigantic, 46 inches.
Tommy just slammed on the gas tank there, diesel tank.
Yes. So, and we got it because it looks like just amazing Tonka toy, right?
Yeah.
And Boyce Equipment, they paint them, they can do all kinds of options. We got air conditioning in this one.
Yeah, these are not very livable trucks.
No, they're loud, they're slow. So they try to make them a little bit more livable, which is what this is.
And this is definitely like a one-use vehicle. It's a toy. There's nothing, this is not something that you're going to use as an everyday driver unless you really like loud diesels.
So, Tad, if you brought this for your wife,
yeah, that might be a
bad idea. That probably would have been a problem. A Cayenne is less of a problem, I would say. So this was about 45,000-ish to close to 50,000, depending on, you know, if you do have a deal or not, basically what you're buying. But we did get a winch, electric winch, on the front of this thing. Dude, it looks amazing, but it's still kind of tough to live with.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, it sits in the barn. The good news about it is it's got the same footprint as like a dually. So it's very usable. So you could use it almost as
an everyday. You could park it in any parking spot.
Yeah. And everybody, of course, comments on it. And Voice has done a great job in making it, you know, as livable as possible. But it's still a military truck, and it still has all of the downsides of a military truck. So, you know, think about that conversation that you're having in the convertible Corvette. This is like...
This is the opposite.
This is the exact opposite. Yeah. This is times 10 worse.
And people say, oh, you have an exhaust pipe on the passenger side. That's why it's loud. No. The engine is loud.
It's
without
a Caterpillar.
It's a straight six Caterpillar diesel, turbo diesel. It's loud anytime. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, idling it or driving it. It also has that compressor, right? So when you turn on the air conditioning, the compressor is very loud. Every aspect of this thing is very loud. And its top speed, what we registered, what, 57 miles per hour?
And the world's coming to an end.
Yeah, and because you're revving the, you know, you're kind of, it has a four-speed Allison transmission. So even if it had one additional gear, it could be a lot more livable. But yeah, it's just a big, so we towed with it. Case and I took our skid steer on the trailer. We took it down to a fueling station. And the thing didn't care.
When the great flood comes, we'll be ready for it.
Yes. The thing didn't care. It drove the same with a 10,000-pound trailer as if it wasn't towing. Didn't really care what was behind it. So that's the truck.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a YouTuber, you know.
It's a YouTuber truck.
We're kind of in this weird space where we're journalists, but we're YouTubers. This is definitely the YouTuber truck. Not the journalist truck, because no one's buying these. You know, we're not going to review it, but we are going to have fun with it. It didn't, you know.
We had a flat tire on it.
We did have a flat tire. We had a, that was also a
which scared us.
Yeah. Because getting those tires, they're 44?
They're 46s.
Oh, 46s.
So changing a tire, you know, usually, you know, it's a no problem. Get a modern spare.
Yeah, our friends at Modern Spare, they don't make a spare for this.
They don't make a spare for this.
You got to go take it to a heavy equipment shop.
So, but the tire itself weighs, what, almost 150 pounds?
Yeah, it's also tough to take off.
So
for those of you thinking of buying an earth roamer, just keep that in mind. Changing a tire on an earth roamer is not an easy thing.
Be prepared to lift 150 pounds, basically. So we ended up, we got a bottle jack, you know, to help lifting up the axle.
It was an afternoon.
but you and I ran out of stroke on this jack.
Yeah.
So we had to bring a skid steer. So we have a skid steer on the property. So we were actually able to use the skid steer to lift up the truck a little bit more.
So we could take the tire off. Yeah.
It was a whole...
It helps to have a skid steer in a ranch if you can have one of these. That sounds really like uppity, but it does. It's the truth.
There is no practicality here.
There's no practicality. Yeah. There's no... It's just fun. And let's close on this. Out of all of the vehicles... And I'm gonna include trucks that we bought this year. So keep in mind, we also bought an F-150. We also bought a Canyon. We also bought a Bronco. We bought a lot. We also sold a lot. That's our business. So not making money selling cars, but reviewing them and, of course, making content
and turning them over.
Which is your favorite? Either let's just go with the cars right now.
It has to be the Viper, really. Yeah. I mean, even though I do like the Fiat after I drove it. I haven't driven the Porsche 997 yet, so I think I could fall in love with the Porsche potentially as well. But it has to be the Viper.
For me, I think it's going to be the Fiat because it's the one that gives me the most joy for the least amount of money. It's just such a surprise because, you know, we've had Porsches before. I knew what that was going to be like. I love the Bentley, but once again, you know, it's an expensive car. The Z06 scares me a little bit. To be honest.
Yeah, no, it scares me too.
I like the Viper, but my issue with the Viper is it's not an around town car. It does not like stop and go traffic.
No, because the clutch is kind of actually, the pedal is actually physically high.
Yeah, it's heavy.
And it's heavy.
Yeah.
So it's really not a car you want to be stuck at with in Denver traffic.
Yeah, right? The Fiat surprised me the most. How about all the trucks? And we'll end on that note.
You know, in the truck, just the really honest, I think, truck, I mean, the really useful is the F-150, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not too big. It's not too small. Yes, the V8. I mean, we kind of talked about it during our truck podcast as well. The V8 is good. I mean, maybe it's not quite as torquey as, of course, the twin-turbo V6s that they have. But I think the F-150 is probably my favorite.
I'm torn because also the Silverado HD. So that, yes. The Silverado HD is the most useful. We've put the most miles. We've got like 14,000 miles on it.
15,000
in a year.
Yeah.
The F-150 is the kind of the Swiss Army knife. It does the most. But my heart is torn between two trucks. I would say my favorite was the Maverick all-wheel drive because it was, once again, there's a part of me that's really cheap, and it was cheap, and it was very useful. My mom passed away this year, and I moved all of her stuff with that one little truck, and really grateful for that. And then so that's my head. My heart goes with the Canyon AT4X because it's incredibly good off-road, and it's got this incredibly gorgeous color, this orange. They call it Desert Sun, I think, but mm-hmm. I love that orange color. I'm just smitten by it, and I love the interior. It's got like red seat belts and red contrast. So from a style point of view, it's probably my favorite. It's also kind of a truck that does it all in some ways if you don't need the full-size capability of towing over 6,000 pounds. But I think if I had to pick, I'd go. My head would go with the Ford, but my heart would go with the Canyon.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
All right, guys, remember, head on over to All TFL. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas.
Merry
happy
Christmas.
Happy holidays.
And happy Festivus.
Yes.
We didn't air any grievances, Andre. And we didn't do any feats of strength.
But we did have marriage advice.
We did. Thank you for letting us give marriage advice. That's the first time.
And I don't know if that's the best place to get marriage advice, but yeah.
Hey, remember we had a Cayenne?
But we're still married to our wives.
We are.
Yeah.
We had a Cayenne. It was a good car.
Yeah.
We had a turbo, first gen.
Yeah.
No, second gen turbo.
That's right.
Yeah, second gen turbo. Which Cayenne did you buy? Which year? What was the year on it?
Yeah, let us know.
Let us know. All right, we'll see you next time. Ciao.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.